What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another edition of Down to the Wire. Week two is in the books, and it was a rough week this week for Mason. Week one was rough for me. Week two is rough for him. So he's kind of licking his wounds, coming back. He's actually at the game in Tuscaloosa for the Alabama-Texas game, and we're going to get into all of that here in the show, so stay tuned as we get into that. But Mason, did you get to catch any football while you were in Tuscaloosa, or were you just like out of the loop of everything?
So I actually was able to catch a few quarters of the Colorado game because I can't miss my Buffs.
You're the Buffs guy.
Yeah. But other than that, not really. So I'm going to have to rely on you a little bit for this. So I'm looking forward to you telling me how to feel this week. But look, like I'm just waiting for the weekend for us to both be happy coming into a podcast. Maybe it'll be a little bit more exciting for us. But, you know, right now, 2 weeks in, it hasn't been great.
Yeah, it for sure has been a rough couple weeks, for sure. And so I think that also just I think that also makes great content for us and for our listeners that always has something to rant and rave about. And I think, I don't know what all you have planned and how you feel about this. I have left you alone the whole time. I have not texted you a single time other than for fantasy football stuff and for podcast like planning stuff. So I've let you be, I've let you stew like you did let me last week. So what he says is going to be the first time that I've heard it. So I don't know even what's going to go on, but I even have some of my own thoughts on this too that I'm sure we'll be going back and forth on. So it's going to be a great segment whenever we get to the Alabama Texas kind of recap. But
I've got to say, we've both grown a lot as individuals, because we used to give each other crap every time our team would lose, and now we just kind of let each other sit on it for a little bit and breathe and digest. So props to us.
Yeah, man. You know, I think us being partners on the podcast together has really helped us, because if you or I piss each other off so much, I might not have a co-host. I mean, I might just either kick you off or you just might not want to join anymore. So yeah. I think that has forced some growth for us, which is good. You know, you get older and wiser.
Kids help,
kids help for sure. Absolutely. So yeah, man, so let's go ahead and dive into some of the games. And you know what, you kind of mentioned it off the bat, the only game you really kind of paid attention to was the Colorado game. That was the game that both of us were really you obviously are, you know, through the roof of Colorado. I'm kind of creeping my way up there, being impressed. Wanted to see what they do to Nebraska, and it was a slow start.
Slow burn,
but they got it done. It also helps that Jeff Sims is absolutely horrible and cannot handle a football as the quarterback at all. Can't catch snaps, can't hand it off, throws interceptions. I mean, he's horrible, but Colorado took advantage. So give me your thoughts on the Colorado game.
So I got to watch the first probably quarter, and then we left to leave for the game. And one thing I noticed kind of at the beginning was that the one thing that I was impressed about Colorado at the beginning in the first game was they didn't have as many penalties as I was expecting. And you kind of started to see that creep up on them in the second game. I think they had 4 sportsmanlike conduct penalties. That's a lot. So they definitely need to clean that up. But when I was able to catch it at the kind of tail end of it, I was impressed, man. Shador Sanders is doing his thing right now. And that Nebraska is not a great team, so I don't want to overstep that. But one thing that they are good at, they do have a good defense. So for them to be able to put up the amount of points that they did on that defense, I was impressed by it. But like you said, Jeff Sims, he's struggling right now. I saw a stat the other day that he's leading college football in turnovers by any individual. He's at the top. So that's struggle bus for Matt Rhule. I will say this. I still do believe in Matt Rhule. So I think he's going to be able to turn the program around, but obviously it's definitely not going to be this year. So hopefully he can find a quarterback in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, whenever the game was starting, they were giving info about Jeff Sims, and I was kind of hopeful. I remember watching him some at Georgia Tech last year, thought he's a pretty good talent. The issue for him, even coming into the season, has always been turnovers and turning the ball over and throwing interceptions. And there is like a stat they showed on the TV that basically he had like 26 starts and 26 interceptions in those.
Dang.
And one of the big offseason things that they say is like, hey, we're going to get better at turnovers. And he basically turned the ball over like the whole game. When you turn over the ball and you're not better than your opponent, I mean, you're going to get results like this. And so Matt Rhule is going to have a really hard decision to make, because he brought this guy in from the transfer portal, hoping that he would be kind of a stabilizing force as Matt tries to get the program. He's trying to get the program back on track. So, you know, that was the hope, right? Was kind of stabilizing. Maybe it's not amazing, but it's not bad. He's not losing us games. Well, he's losing us games. I mean, he lost us against Minnesota in week one. He definitely lost us the game against Colorado. Couldn't get anything going. Kept turning the ball over. And so you got to think, hey, man, going into week three, do you make a quarterback change? I mean, you probably don't have a great other option. So, you know, it's he's in a rough spot. I mean,
yeah.
And it also doesn't, I mean, Nebraska has a lot of talent they have to bring in to start being competitive. So, I mean, it's going to be a multi-year build for Matt Rhule. He's done it before. I mean, he did it at Temple. He's done it at Baylor. The only things about those is that they were all kind of shorter stints. So he wasn't there just building and keeping the program to what it is at the level that it is, maintaining it. He always jumped from spot to spot after he had that great season. So we'll see how he can build it and see if he can maintain it. But I mean, I'm like you, man. I'm a big Matt Rhule fan. It's going to be another year, tough year for Nebraska. They should have won week one. And you know, you just get blown out by a hot Colorado team in week two on the road in an environment that probably hasn't been that crazy in decades.
One thing that's kind of frustrating, well, not I wouldn't say frustrating, just ESPN, why are you choosing to go to the Colorado State game for your game day when you have Oregon and Colorado coming up the very next week? Like, I get it. Week four is loaded. Like, I'm insanely excited for that. But come on, man. Like, that you had a great opportunity to make that your game day, but you're choosing Colorado State the week before that.
Yeah, I honestly thought the same thing. I mean, it is on the road at Oregon. The Oregon game is on the road, but I was thinking, why not the next week, USC coming down? That exactly. Was the one that I thought that, hey, they're going to bring game day to Colorado. Sure, they might lose to Oregon, but they're going to be 3-1 against USC and still ranked. Why not go to that game? That's in 3 weeks, just to look at, you know, we obviously have to look forward and see what other games are possibly on those weeks. But the week of the USC game, I mean, you got Utah, Oregon State. If Cam Rising can be back, that's a good one out west. Auburn, Georgia. You had, again, USC, Colorado. You have Notre Dame and Duke could be a good game. LSU, Ole Miss. I mean, there are some decent games that week, but I mean, for sure, they're definitely like trying to shoot their shot early to make sure they don't miss it and go to the Colorado State game, which, I mean, I guess it's fine, but it's not the biggest game of the week.
So where do you think Colorado goes from here? Because I do think they obviously I really feel like they're going to beat Colorado State. Oregon is going to be a little tricky for them. But I'm really eyeing that USC game. If they keep playing the way that they are right now on the offensive end with Shedeur Sanders, that's going to be a shootout, bro. So I'm really looking forward to that one.
Well, I mean, I told you last week, I mean, we both agree on the Oregon thing. I mean, I think Oregon's going to win. Oregon was shaky this week, but they were on the road at Texas Tech in a tough environment. They'll be at home against Colorado. But, yeah, I mean, I think they probably lose to Oregon and I mean, again, I'm calling my shot early. I can easily see them beating and upsetting USC at home. I mean, it lines up perfectly for them. And USC doesn't have a defense until they prove otherwise. And that's going to be the game where they're going to have to. You're not going to prove it to me by playing Stanford. You're not going to prove it to me by playing San Jose State. Like, you're going to be facing up against a really good offense and a great quarterback with crazy weapons on the outside. Let's see what you can do. Heisman Trophy winner against a guy that could be going to New York matchup early in the first week of October or last Saturday in September. I'm about it, man. I think it's going to be a great game. And again, I'm calling my shirt early. I'm calling the Colorado upset against USC.
Speaking my language right there, Cam. I love to hear it.
Yeah, I'm hopping on the bandwagon, Mason. I'm on board right now.
Man, but they're just so fun, dude. They're so fun to watch. It's hard to explain, but the way they play to me is a fun brand of football to watch. Like, obviously they're awesome on defense, but they're so fast, or they're awesome on offense, but they're so fast on defense at the same time. They've just put together a really good team. And honestly, like, I think they're going to keep building. I saw that the number one quarterback recruit for 2025, I believe, was in the building for the Nebraska game. So that's the thing about Deion, man. He can convince anybody to come to Colorado. And that's why I thought he was going to be an awesome coach, because he's going to be a great recruiter. And so he's definitely proven that. And it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what he's done so far is super exciting. I mean, they win this weekend against Colorado State. They only need one more win just to surpass their win total. And kind of like I said last week, man, like, everybody is going to have this recalibration of expectations of Colorado and what they need to be. Because before the season, everybody's like, they ain't going to be good. They're going to lose to TCU by a couple scores and maybe get a win against Nebraska. They'll probably start like 1-3 or something like that. Well, now they beat TCU and it's just TCU. They're not very good. And they beat Nebraska. And it was like, well, Nebraska isn't any good either. And Colorado's not very good. They're just going to get pummeled. But no. Like, you guys started the season thinking they'd get beat by TCU, and they beat them on the road. So, like, give them their props. We're going to recalibrate. We think this is a really good competing Colorado team. They're not going to win the conference. They're not going to go to the conference championship. I don't think anybody's expecting that. But they're going to be competitive in most every single game, and bowl eligibility for sure on the table for this team. And if that's the case, if they get to a bowl, Deion coach of the year, easy.
Oh, easily. I agree with that completely, because I really do think there's a world where they're probably going to end up 6-6. I think they can flirt with 7-5. And if he's either one of those, I think he's definitely got to be coach of the year. Not just Pac-12 coach of the year, but total coach of the year, man.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move on. That's the only game you watched. Besides the Bama Texas game, let's get into some other kind of sneaky good games that happened that I thought was going to be a good game. One of the games that we picked, Utah Baylor. Baylor got embarrassed the week before against Texas State. I really thought that they would really bounce back in a good way against, again, a Cam Risingless Utah team, and that's going to be a big question for Utah: is when are you getting Cam Rising back? You are not the same team without him. And you went to Baylor, which is a hard place to play on the road. It's always hard. And Baylor basically choked the game away in the fourth quarter. It was a low scoring game the whole time, defensive battle. And then Baylor threw two interceptions. The second one was just mind boggling why you throw that football. But two interceptions that basically sealed it. They, though, then had a chance. They had a throw that made it to the end zone on the final play, and swear to God, should have been pass interference and another extra play on the 2-yard line. Like, they had the ball at the 30-yard, like at Utah's 30-yard line, throwing this ball for a chunk, and could have been a great catch at the very least. Should have been a defensive pass interference call for another play. And that would have been crazy going into overtime. But really gutsy game by Dave Aranda and the Baylor Bears. Obviously, it's not what you want, because you're now 0-2. And I mean, it's not going to get any easier when you get into Big 12 play. So rough spot for Dave Aranda and the Baylor Bears, but they did fight back. For Utah, again, like I said, kind of starting, you're just a completely different team without Cam Rising. He makes your offense go. And even without their other tight end, Keithy. You don't have those two main cogs. It's going to be rough for you whenever you enter Pac-12 play, because go up against Oregon, go up against Washington, go up against USC, go up against Colorado, who we just talked about. You have a really good defense, but you're at least going to have to score some points, and it's a little tough to do that with your second and third string quarterback.
So, have you heard anything on when Cam Rising might actually be coming back?
I haven't heard anything solid, and like, their coach is just one of those guys that's going to keep everything super close to the because
next week they have Weber State, so obviously he's not playing that game. That'd just be kind of dumb. But after that, this week they have Weber State. Next week, week four, that's when they start Pac-12 play. So they go UCLA, Oregon State, and then they play Cal for the next 3 weeks, which honestly, like, UCLA's looked good. Oregon State has looked really good with DJ. And then Cal, surprisingly, is not as much of a pushover as they have been in the past. So, I mean, those are three winnable games for Utah. But if you have Cam Rising, that makes you feel a lot better with that. So, yeah, I mean, it's about to start getting real interesting for him. So I do think Cam Rising needs to kind of get back quick.
Yeah, I mean, just doing a quick Google search on Cam Rising, I mean, there's a article on here from a day ago from Desert News that says him returning to the game isn't up to Utah, it's up to his surgeon in LA. There's another article saying that it's possible he could return this week. Nobody freaking knows, man. So
he tore his ACL in the Rose Bowl, right? The
Rose Bowl. Yeah.
So January?
That's January. So, I mean, this is like a super aggressive recovery time frame. And I mean, maybe it'll work out for him even when he comes back. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you're really going to have peak Cam Rising until like maybe end of the season. I mean, he might play some, but he's not going to be him fully until at least then. And that's just assuming he can just make it through the games without getting hurt again.
Yeah, that's tough for Utah, man. Because they're such a good team. And with him, they just become a lot better, obviously. But like I said, after that Cal game, it just gets real tough for them. And if Cam Rising's not at 100%, they could be sitting on three, maybe four losses. So, he definitely needs to get back for them.
I mean, they're going to be in most games, if not every game, just because of their defense and the way they play. But I mean, like you said, I mean, they're not going to get over the top and get where they want to be without him, unless one of their backup quarterbacks just starts taking control and he's the guy and you know, he can get the offense rolling. But I mean, Nate Johnson, good player. He's not really a quarterback yet. I mean, he can run really well, but doesn't have the arm talent yet. And then the other guy doesn't really have much mobility and isn't even then still super accurate and confident. So, again, like you said, I mean, they're just in a rough spot. And if you're a Utah fan, you're just hoping and praying Cam Rising can have a great recovery and come back ready to go here soon. Another game that I loved watching, Mason. I loved watching this game. Miami and Texas A&M.
Okay, I was waiting for this.
Destroyed A&M. Do not pay attention to the scoreboard. This, I mean, it already kind of shows as a blowout, but it was worse than what the scoreboard showed. The only thing stopping Miami was, just like the only thing that stopped Florida State a couple weeks ago, was that the game ended. That A&M defense was torched all game long. And the only reason A&M had a lead in this game and scored as many points as they did is that Miami muffed a punt and had a punt blocked in the first quarter and the first half. That is the only reason. Texas A&M could not consistently take the ball down the field. The offense is still not very good. And I don't care what they did against New Mexico or New Mexico State or whoever they played the week before, because they're one of the worst teams in football. They scored 33 in this game. 14 to 17 of those points are because of turnovers that they cause or because of miscues by Miami. And Miami was still able to overcome that and score 48 points on the Texas A&M defense.
Is college football just not 10 times more fun when Miami and Florida State, some of the world, are just better?
Yeah, I mean, listen, let's talk about that then. I mean, you brought it up. College football, and we kind of talked about this, or at least I've talked about this in the past. College football is so much better when you have your powers good, when you have Miami good, you have Florida State good, you have Texas good, yeah. You have USC good, you have Oregon good, you have your teams in the Midwest, like a Nebraska or a Colorado, or a, you know, you got Michigan and Ohio State, and then add in Penn State, and then, you know, Georgia's good, and LSU is good, and Bama is good, and, you know, Tennessee is coming back. And not just because, oh, hey, there's more teams that can win a championship. It's also, hey, like the kids over in Southern Cal, they aren't just coming over to Tuscaloosa, or they aren't just all stockpiling over into Athens now. Same thing with the kids down in South Florida. They're not just leaving the state, going to Tuscaloosa or going to Baton Rouge or going to Athens. You aren't having that consolidation of all the talent because the home schools aren't good. When you have Texas good and to an extent A&M good and serviceable, and then LSU's right there at the border, that whole Texas landscape, there's tons of players there, but the best ones, they want to stay in state and know that they can compete for championships and make it to the league. And before Texas could really come back and get out of their own way, it's like, I'll just go to Alabama. I'll just go to Georgia. And that's why you have the Super Dynasty teams, because you had voids of competitive football in these big schools. Now that they're coming back and rising back up, it's way more fun, dude. It's way more fun to have competent teams in the ACC and competent teams in the Pac-12, RIP, and competent teams in the Big 12 that can actually contend for a championship. And one of the conversations after this weekend is, what's wrong with the SEC?
Yeah, dude, it's been rough. They're what, 3-6 in Power 5 games so far?
It's not good.
It's something. It's pretty bad. But let's wrap it back to Texas A&M real quick. So we've both notoriously been Jimbo haters. I started to believe just a little bit, and of course,
you swapped me right on me, dude. Words.
I wouldn't say complete swap. Let's not get too crazy, but I had a hint of belief. But I said in the offseason that this Auburn game coming up next week is going to end up being one of the biggest games on their schedule. And here it is. You already have one loss to Miami, and now you have Auburn coming up next week, week 4. That is going to be a huge game for Jimbo. I'm not a total believer in Auburn right now. I think Hugh Freeze is doing some decent things with them. But, man, that game's going to be big for him, because if you lose that game against Auburn, it's going to be real rough for Jimbo. That buyout is going to be looking a lot cheaper than the number actually is.
Yeah, I mean, and again, like, don't be fooled by the number of points they scored, man. Like, the offense wasn't that impressive. And the thing that saved A&M in a lot of these games was the defense was really good. The defense isn't that great, especially in the secondary, which I thought was going to be one of the strengths for them this year, was their secondary, because they had some seniors returning. But they got torched by a Miami team that the week before really couldn't pass the ball. They could really run it. And so everybody thought, okay, if they can't run the ball, they're going to lose. They couldn't run the ball great. Van Dyke passed it for like 12 million yards. I mean, like, and 5 touchdowns. Like, it honestly was kind of unbelievable as I was watching it. And to bring in another game that happened at the same time was Ole Miss and Tulane. I mean, your Tulane Green Waves gave up a good fight with their backup quarterback,
A rough game to lose your starter for.
Rough game to lose your starter for. Could have won it. The score looks worse. The score shows Ole Miss won by 17. No. Tulane was controlling the line of scrimmage, Mason, in that game. When you think Ole Miss football right now, you think Quinshon Judkins, and you think big shots with Jackson Dart. Quinshon didn't have a great day. Ole Miss could not successfully, consistently run the football on Tulane. I mean, like, props to Tulane. They're a good team this year, you know. Willie Fritz has built a good program. You're not an SEC program, okay? Ole Miss should control the line of scrimmage against a team like Tulane. I'm an Ole Miss fan. We barely squeaked out that win. I would be nervous as crap with some of these games coming up against an LSU and against a Bama and against teams that can actually control the line of scrimmage. Because if you can't do that against Tulane, what are you going to do against Auburn and against Bama that want to run the ball down your throat? That's going to make me nervous for Ole Miss the rest of the way. You won the game. Props on you. Why did you go to New Orleans to play at Tulane? Okay. Like, and it's the same thing with Bama this week. Why the heck are you going to South Florida of all places? Why are you taking a road game there? Doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, I'd be nervous, man. I'd be real nervous if that was Ole Miss.
Yeah, that's the problem with Lane Kiffin, though, is like he focuses on his skill positions a little bit too much with his recruiting. Like he's always going to have a really good quarterback. He's going to have a good running back, and he's going to have good wide receivers. But he never really has been able to fill in the middle and the back end of his defense. And yeah, I mean, from what you're saying, it definitely showed against Tulane. So I don't know, man. Yeah,
Ole Miss ran it 35 times for 89 yards.
Gosh.
Two and a half yards a carry. Quinshon Judkins ran it 18 times for 48 with an average of 2.7 yards a carry.
And that's the guy who led the SEC last year in rushing. And you're putting up
40-something yards. Tulane ran it 45 times for 111 yards. Ran it more, still 2.5 yards a carry. Their leading rusher ran it 23 times for 92 yards with an average of 4 yards a carry.
Look, all you're telling me right now is that I can claim that I was right about Tulane, as long as they had their starting
quarterback. They lost. So if they had their starter, man, then maybe they would have won.
Yeah.
I mean, that definitely is a big loss, but be super impressed with their backup guy doing this. I mean, wasn't a high scoring game, but he kept them in the game until the end when they had to really go for it. I mean, that's the reason Ole Miss won by 17. It's because it was the end of the game. You got to, you know, go for it and, you know, had some unfortunate turnovers and stuff that, you know, led to scores. But that game was like a field goal game at the end, really. And again, Ole Miss, not super impressive. Hey, you won on the road. Congrats to you. I'm going to be nervous about those line of scrimmages because, again, it's Tulane. All right. You got SEC football coming up. You better figure something out. Otherwise, if Quinshon Judkins runs for 12 carries for 48 yards against any SEC football team in the West, they win?
No.
Probably not. Yeah, I mean, probably not. I mean, not Arkansas, not Mississippi State. Yeah. I mean, it ain't going to happen. So that's Ole Miss. some other games that happened that I kind of paid attention to. I mean, obviously, we went over watched a lot of the, basically mainly the Bama-Texas game, but some other scores that I kind of wanted to point out. Oregon and Texas Tech was a really interesting game late at night. I don't know if you got a chance to watch it or not, or if you were still on the way home with all the traffic and everything after games, but it was a weird, crazy game. It was one of those, again, it was, I mean, the final score was by 8, 38-30 for Oregon, but I mean, again, it was one of those unfortunate turnovers at the end that basically ended it for Texas Tech. They had a quick drive they tried to do all the way down the field. Obviously, it didn't work. But gutsy performance. I mean, with Texas Tech, it was kind of the same thing that I was kind of thinking about Baylor of, hey, you went on the road to Wyoming and you lost. You're going to come home and host a really good Oregon team, and you're going to give it your best effort. We didn't pick this game. I mean, we had 10 games that we picked last week, and this is just happened to be the one that we didn't. But you know, I probably would have picked Texas Tech to cover. I don't remember what the spread is. I think Oregon with the final turnover touchdown ended up covering. So bad bet there, a bad beat, whatever it is. But
I feel like this was kind of a tricky game for Oregon, like it because of how Texas Tech lost to Wyoming the week before that. You kind of just look at the score and you sit there in your Oregon and you're like, okay, they lost to Wyoming. We should be fine. But look, Texas Tech is a difficult place to play. You've seen that's kind of a house of horrors for a lot of the bigger programs. Weirdly, like Texas struggles there too. And but yeah, if you're Oregon, you're making that trip out there after they just lost to Wyoming. It's kind of a trap game. And it seems like they kind of fell for it a little bit, but, you know, they were able to pull out the win. So good for them.
Yeah, I mean, this is still a pretty good Texas Tech team that, again, starts 0-2. But this was a team that a lot of people were having as their sleeper team in the Big 12 and saying that Oregon better watch out going to Lubbock. I mean, Lubbock is in the middle of nowhere, Texas. So you're going to have guys that are in Eugene, Oregon, fly out basically to the desert, middle of nowhere, Texas, and play a football game. I mean, it's going to be a rough time for anybody, like you said, but a lot of these kids and probably even me probably couldn't even you give me the state of Texas on a map. I probably couldn't tell you where Lubbock is. I mean,
yeah, no shot.
I'm pretty okay at geography, but actual state geography, each individual state's not a chance. I could tell you where Lubbock is. Not a chance at all. Let's see. Notre Dame actually played really well against NC State. I know that was another game we were kind of looking at to kind of give a good barometer of how good Notre Dame is. They took care of business. Sam Hartman threw 4 more touchdowns. I mean, he's playing really well for Notre Dame. So they keep rolling. And this is going to be relative to a game we're going to be picking later when it comes to Tennessee. Tennessee played Austin Peay. And like people are there listening right now is like, why the heck is Cam talking about Tennessee and Austin Peay? Like, what is going on here? Tennessee won the game. They won 30-13, Mason. And for a long while, it was like 10-3. Or at halftime, it was 13-6. I mean, the Tennessee offense isn't really clicking a ton. Joe Milton having a slow start, having issues with stuff that he's had issues with in the past that I was hoping he'd clean up with his accuracy. They're more of a running team. They're running for more yards than they're passing right now. So it's a little bit of a different kind of attack than what Tennessee's doing. But I mean, maybe you could chalk it up to, hey, they're just looking ahead to the Florida game and just leave it at that. I could understand it. Again, it's Austin Peay. There's not a ton to learn from it, but it would give anybody a little bit of concern when you're about to go on the road to Florida and you hadn't won there in 2 decades. So,
yeah, well, it's been since like 2003 or something like
it's
that.
Been since it's 2003, been Ron Zook was the coach at Florida the last time Tennessee won at Florida in Gainesville.
Yeah, that's going to be rough. But yeah, man, like, again, like it was hard for me to keep up with stuff. And that was one of those scores that I was looking at, kind of questioning what was actually happening in the middle of it. But I don't know, man, maybe Hendon Hooker was that big of a deal for them last year, but I had high hopes for Milton coming in, but you know, they could still kind of pull through, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, it is the second game of the season. It's time to get, this is going to be the week that if Joe Milton's going to be the guy that you and I both kind of hoped that he was going to be, this is going to be the time to show it. So, and we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to the picks, but let's go ahead and get to the game that everybody was waiting on and everybody's been talking about since, and the game that I have left you alone until now. So Mason, Alabama, Texas in Tuscaloosa, you went to the game, you were in person watching it. Alabama falls by 10, 34-24. How are you feeling? What do you think of the game? Thoughts afterwards? Do we need to do a deep dive on the program? what's going on here?
So I got to start with two things. First off, it was an incredible environment. It was a lot of fun just being in there. It was so, so loud. One thing I love about being in-person games is there's a lot of things that you see on the field that you definitely don't see through the TV. So there were some things that stuck out to me. And but the other thing is, man, like, I think if you're going to talk about this game, you really got to start with Texas. Texas looked incredible. I thought they were awesome. They were a lot faster. They played well. They came in. They had a great game plan, and they executed, man. So you really got to give props to Sark. I wasn't expecting them to play as well as they did, but they came out and they showed that they're definitely one of the top four teams in the nation right now. And looking back at it, like they have a very, very easy schedule coming through for the rest of the season. So I think you definitely got to expect Texas to be a power for the rest of the year. But yeah, man, like it was tough. Okay. It was a tough game to watch, but it was a weird game to watch because the entire time I was sitting there, I never felt like the game was out of hand. Even weirdly, like Alabama was up going into the fourth quarter, 16-13. And then Texas just did every single thing right. Every time Alabama got a little bit of momentum, Texas would just immediately chop them off at the knees. It was going into the fourth quarter. It was like two straight big plays for touchdowns. Like Jalen Milrow had the terrible interception that basically took them completely out of the game. The sky definitely isn't falling for me right now, which feels a little weird after coming off a 10-point loss at home, which I don't think, honestly, I really don't think that's happened under Nick Saban. It just feels so weird. I feel worse about some of the stuff that I've actually read post-game coming out of the game than I did actually in the game. Tyler Booker today, he was doing a press conference, and one of his, you know, they asked him a question, and his response was, "I feel like we probably took winning for granted like we did last year." You didn't win crap last year. So why are you coming into this season taking it for granted? And then he continues to say there was energy and there was focus, but it wasn't where it needed to be, talking about practice. This is potentially the biggest regular season game on the schedule, and you're telling me you don't have the proper energy coming into practice, going into the game? Like that was something that Alabama struggled with last year. And again, it carried over to this year. So those were the two things that was the thing that really worried me coming out of it. And even Saban in his press conference after the game, he sat there and somebody asked him if he thought about switching quarterbacks mid game. And normally when a coach gets a question like that, it's a, no, Milrow's our guy. We just wanted to ride with him. We liked his confidence, blah, blah, blah. No, he straight up said, yeah, I thought about switching quarterbacks. What, Nicholas, come on, what are we doing? But so getting into the game, I mean, the thing that was craziest to me is I know everybody's going to blame Milrow. Okay, like you're the quarterback at Alabama. You're going to either get way too much praise or you're going to get way too much criticism. And I think right now he's getting way too much criticism. I don't think he played very well. I do think he had a bad game. The two interceptions were terrible. They were both completely on him. The first one, I could sit there and see it from a mile away. I think we lined up trips right, and Burton was closest slot to the line of scrimmage, and nobody was covering him up. So which means linebacker probably has him if he's going across the middle, safety probably has him if he's going deep. And if you look at it just from an untrained eye, if he runs a quick out, he's going to be wide open. But knowing what the defense was probably set up in, if Burton's running a quick out, corner's going to step up and have him and cover him. And that's exactly what happened. Milrow looked at it. Oh, if he runs a quick out, going to be wide open. And of course, the corner dropped off, picked it off. And that all just comes back to me on Milrow just not actually knowing how to read a defense right now. When you watch him in the pocket, he has quick feet, but he doesn't actually look like a quarterback that knows what the defense is running and how to read what they're going to do. He just looks like a guy that gets the play called in and he sits there and he runs it to his hot route and who he's supposed to get the ball to. He's always locked in on one side of the field or one receiver, which I think is his problem right now. But with all that being said, I don't feel like you can put the entire blame on him coming out of the game, because let's be real, man, like the offensive line played horrible. I mean, they were terrible. I think we ran the ball for like 3 yards a carry or something like that, and Milrow got sacked 5 times. Like, this was coming out of camp, this was probably the most hype I've ever had out of the O-line group, and they were supposed to be this saving grace for the team this year, and we were supposed to be able to ride them all the way to the end. But man, they let everybody down, if we're being real. Like, Texas was constantly up in Milrow's grill during the entire game. and they were just pushing and pushing and pushing. And most of, I think four out of the five sacks or something like that were on three or four man lines, which I was definitely not expecting, because if you're supposed to have this huge offensive line, you're supposed to be getting the push. You're supposed to be protecting your quarterback. So they need to work on pass pro. But I don't know, man, like it, there's a whole like blame pie that I think you have to put it on. Milroe needs to get a little bit of it. The offensive line needs to get a lot of it. And also another guy I would put it on is Tommy Rees. Honestly, like I don't think he called a bad game. I just think there's some things that he needs to do as the offensive coordinator to help put Milroe in better situations early in the game. For the past 2 weeks, last week with Middle Tennessee State, and even at the start of the game this week against Texas, they were running a bunch of quick routes. They were running a bunch of bubble screens. They were running a bunch of hot routes out to their wide receivers. And that's been really effective. Like Alabama so far, they don't have those quick hitter routes with their wide receivers that they can really get to, which I think is kind of, I don't want to say it's not taking Milroe's confidence away, but when you have routes like that where you can kind of just swing it out to your wide receiver, he gets 5 yards. That helps build confidence, man. And we just really don't have that. We don't have a lot of pre-snap motion, which is something that I think we really need to incorporate in the next couple of weeks. Because if you're getting pre-snap motion, you can actually read what the defense is doing and have a better eye and opportunity and thought on what the defense is actually going to be in. It's so weird. Like I really don't know how to feel, because I thought the defense played really good until the fourth quarter started. And then Texas scores 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter and they hold the ball for the last 7 minutes of the game and just absolutely bleed the clock out. And I don't know. It just feels weird. Like I'm thankful that we lost to Texas and it wasn't an SEC game, because I do feel like everything is in front of us right now. Like this is a very talented team. Honestly, like I think if you look at it numbers wise, they technically have the most talented team in the nation. You just have to get it all put together at this point. Another thing that blew me away was that, like, where's our running game at? Like I said, we ran for 3 yards a carry. We were supposed to be dominant on the ground. I don't think Jace McClellan is a dominant running back. He's fine. He's solid. Same thing with Roy Dell Williams. He's fine. He's solid. You got 2 5-stars behind him. You can't get them in the game for just a little bit. Give them a couple carries and see what we're working with at this point. So yeah, man, like it just feels weird. Like I honestly don't know how to feel at this point, because like I feel like we're going to be fine. But Milroe has to develop. He has to be able to read the coverage and know what the defense is going to be running. And he has to put the ball in the right place. He's shown great accuracy on his deep ball. He's obviously very athletic, so he can get you a bunch of yards on the ground, which is definitely helpful in college football. But I think it, again, it's just all going to come down to Milroe's development and what the offensive line is going to do. Because if they're sitting there giving up 5 sacks a game, having the defensive line all up in Milroe's grill for the entire game, we're not going to be very good. But if they can develop and get better on the O-line, then I think we'll be fine. I think we'll be able to survive. So, like I said, the sky's not quite falling for me yet, but it is definitely getting lower. I can see it. It's almost touching my head.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming up, man. How do you feel about this stat, Mason? In the last 7 Power 5 games for Alabama, they are 4-3.
Yeah, that's not great. I just, gosh, man, I don't know. Like, it just feels so weird. Like, Alabama's been so dominant for so long that when they are in a stretch like this where they are struggling, I don't know how to feel at this point. Like, it's weird. It's a weird feeling.
So let's kind of go back, and I'll get back to the game and make some points on the game. But I do kind of, I mean, everybody's talking stay the program, it seems, for Alabama. They lost to Texas. Yeah. And it feels like every single time Alabama loses, it's always a stay of the program type thing, because it's Nick Saban. They've been so dominant. Everybody's waiting on the dynasty to be dead, you know, whatever. But let's realistically, level-headedly, just kind of look back to last year real quick, okay? Because, I mean, there's a lot of similarities between the two teams from last year to this year. the difference from last year, and there's two coexisting realities here for this Alabama team last year. There's reality one, which is, okay, they were just a last-second field goal and an overtime two-point conversion away from being undefeated last year and being in the playoff. Okay, that, you know, that's true. Like, we've all seen that. It's been talked to death. But then there's this second coexisting reality for that team that not a lot of people wanted to talk about or bring up. And it's that they were in so many one-score games that Bryce Young won for that team.
100%.
Texas game last year. You don't have Bryce Young, that's three losses. Texas A&M last year. Maybe you don't have, I mean, you didn't, maybe, you know, don't have a great game. I mean, Milroe was in there that game. That could have been a loss. They had a final play in the end zone. That could have been four losses. Arkansas had a third of the end zone pretty late in the game. I mean, it was close until Milroe blew up. Ole Miss had a play at the end of the game that they could have won it. We're talking about a possible 5-6 loss season last year. You didn't, which is fine. I mean, we're not here to say, oh, hey, they should have been a 6-win team. But the reality is that team was carried by Bryce Young.
100%, yes.
Defense maybe is a little bit better this year, okay? I don't think they'd give up, you know, 52 to Tennessee this year. But you don't have an offense that can score 49. I mean, you don't have a quarterback and quarterback play that can win you games like you did against Texas last year. You don't have Bryce Young. He's not doing Mr. Houdini, and he's not making horrible reads and throwing it straight to defenders for interceptions. And so, kind of breaking down like my preseason thoughts, obviously, like, you can call me a homer, whatever you want, and it probably kind of is a homer pick, but I picked LSU to win the West. And the reason is, Alabama, like, the one thing that I had a question mark that everybody was assuming was going to be an immediate strength and one of the best in the country was offensive line. I wasn't going to be sold on it until I saw it against Texas. And the key to the game that I had in this Texas game, if you go back last week and listen, was Texas run defense against Alabama run offense. And here's the team stats for you, Mason. Alabama ran it 35 times for 107 yards. 3 yards a carry. And that includes some of the scrambles, and half of that is scrambles from Jalen Milroe, not even from your running backs.
That's like, broken down, like,
plays in the passing game that he took off in scramble. Not just normal, conventional. Because, like, and again, this kind of goes to your point about Tommy Rees. Where's the design quarterback run game? You have a horse at quarterback that's struggling in the passing game. You supposedly have this great run offense and graders on the line. Where's the design quarterback runs that's helping out your run game? The rushing yards for Jalen Milroe was broken down passing to where he had his one read and then took off when he didn't like it, or whenever he was getting rushed. And then at the end of the day, like, it was too much and Texas just overwhelmed him. He couldn't run. They made the adjustments. But half of those yards are quarterback scrambles, not even conventional rushing plays. And that was the matchup. That's what I wanted to see. And it's a like, they might be pretty good at run offense, and it might just be because Texas is one of the best run defenses in the country. Could be, again, coexisting reality could be the case, okay? But the pass blocking was horrendous. I don't care who you're playing. It was not good. And this also, as I was watching the game and thinking about it, like, people were on Twitter, and even after the game, I'm talking about, why didn't he make the change? Why didn't he make the change at quarterback and all this stuff? And I'm just sitting here, it's like, what's a just a pass guy that can't run going to do with that offensive line? The only reason you got a chance is because of Milroe being able to use his feet. That's offensive line can't block anybody in pass pro.
No, like you were saying, Milroe is really, like, he did have a bad game, but also at the same time, he was really the only reason that we were halfway in that game. Because if Tyler Buchner is in there, then guess what? He's going to sit there and probably get sacked three or four more times just because he's not going to be able to move outside the pocket just like Milroe is. So his legs, did save us and did give us the opportunity to actually stay and be in the game. So I just, man, like I was feeling so great about the offensive line coming in. And then you sit there and then your five-star left tackle is giving up sack after sack after sack. Like it was a struggle for sure. But yeah, like, I don't know.
It's just one of those things where it's like, I mean, it was definitely worst case. And Texas wasn't even just like, and times they did just pin their ears back and come after Milroe, and that's when he got outside. But and like you said, you have Buckner or the other kid in there. I mean, they are not just trying to, like, because their rush ended up being, hey, we're going to contain, and then when it gets out, that's where we're going to get them, or we're going to blow it up in the middle and get the sacks. If they're just pinning their ears back and coming after you, like, it would have been way worse. Would have been way worse. Milroe has a great deep ball. Great. You can't always block and keep those things. You had two opportunities. Thank God you hit them. Otherwise, you wouldn't have scored 24. You're fortunate Texas dropped a ball, a touchdown in their first drive, got a field goal, and that it was only a 10-point victory. It could have been more. I mean, there were mistakes by the Texas offense that didn't take advantage of the opportunities they were given. And some of that goes to the Alabama defense being a little bit improved. But even still, man, like, it's not a great feeling because this is something none of us are used to seeing of a Nick Saban team.
Well, so a couple other things I need to hit on it. Another big one is you have 10 penalties. Like, that was the same thing that plagued you last year. You struggled all last year. The reason that you were in all these one-score games is because you had an insane amount of penalties the entire season. And that was the same thing that crept on this year against Texas. And two of the big penalties called back touchdowns. You had two touchdowns that got reversed because of two penalties. Like, at that point, if you just add those two on, you win the game. Obviously, you can't do that, but like, the penalties killed you once again. And I know the defense, like, I thought the defense played great in the first three quarters. They're catching a little bit of slack just because of how Texas performed on their deep balls. Like, they had two really great touchdowns, and then Jatavion Sanders had another long run. I think it was like 50 or something yards like that. I'm hesitant to kind of put a lot of blame on Kevin Steele because I felt like Alabama had got no pressure on Quinn Ewers. So he sat back there and he could have baked a cake for the entire game and not had any pressure on him. I feel like the reason that we weren't blitzing as much as we probably should have is because we were a little bit injured in the secondary. Like, Malachi Moore was coming in. He had an ankle injury. Also Jalen Key, he had like a knee injury. And then also you have a freshman safety. So when you have something going on like that in the secondary, it felt like they were trying to get as many bodies back there as they could because they knew that Texas at some point was going to unleash the deep ball. And that's exactly what they did, and they beat them because our front three guys never showed up. I mean, I don't even know if Dallas Turner made a single play. He had maybe one play, and that was it. Chris Braswell on the other side didn't do anything. So there's a lot of things that Alabama's going to have to fix going on in the season, but I think the thing that's making me feel better about it is that most of the stuff that they struggled with in this game, I do feel is fixable. Like, you're going to get a little bit healthier going into the season. But I think that they're going to get better as the season goes on. Hopefully this loss wakes them up and puts them in the right mentality throughout the week of practice. Hopefully they have the correct energy for the rest of the season. And if they do, I think they're going to be really good. But if it reverts back to how it was last year and they just continue to struggle all year with penalties and they don't have the correct energy and XYZ is happening, man, like, it's just going to be the same thing that it was last year. It's going to be another 2-3 loss season. But like I said, they have all the talent in the world. So it's just about putting it all together. And that's difficult in college football, especially now because of how we were talking about there's so much parity. Like, there's 12 teams right now that can win the national championship. And if you're sitting there and you're Alabama and you're putting up 10 penalties a game, you're giving up 5 sacks a game, you're only running for 3 yards a carry, like, you're not going to be one of those 12 teams, if we're being real. But if you get it and put it all together, you could be right there. It's all in front of you at this point. This wasn't an SEC loss, so it doesn't affect you in those standings. And as we know, even if you're a one-loss SEC champ, you're getting into the playoffs. So if you run the table, you're fine, but it's just about all putting it all together.
How confident are you in Jalen Milroe being able to lead this team to undefeated record the rest of the way?
So, man, I feel like I'm higher.
Because I think that's the question. I mean, a lot of people are saying there's no way that he can be the guy because of how he passes the ball, and that you need to have one of the other guys come in to be able to have a vertical or a legit threat other than a deep ball here and there in the passing game. And again, I'm just going to point to the offensive line in response to that. But is he the kind of guy that can really lead this team to that? And I'll let you think on that for a second as I go back to the defense performance against Texas. I mean, they gave up almost 500 yards of offense against Texas. Texas had their own kind of miscues too. But again, the thing to me that was so jarring is there was no pressure from the star edges of this Bama defense, the Dallas Turners. And it was kind of the same thing for Will Anderson last year. I mean, you didn't hear much from Will Anderson last year in some of these games. Yeah, and maybe heard a little bit of Dallas Turner. These were supposed to be the guys, the studs, the game changers that, hey, we can sit back and play zone and only rush four and get there. Like, that was the game plan of, hey, we're going to be able to get guys. And the thing that Bama people and people that were picking this game for Bama were pointing to for Texas was how poorly they played against Rice on the offensive line and how many sacks they gave up. That offensive line looked fine against future NFL players. And that, again, I kind of do and I kind of don't hate making the conversation about like a program thing. But, like, we're talking about a huge dynasty of the best that's ever done in Nick Saban, and this doesn't look anything like what it was in the mid-2010s and even in the late 2000s of, like, dominant interior rushers with guys that can come off the edge. You don't have that. And the fact that your star edge player didn't make an impact in the biggest game of the season so far for you, and then you're going to come out and, to me, make excuses of why you didn't win the game last week because of energy or whatever. Like, you talk to any Alabama player that used to play for Nick Saban on these championship teams. Like, did they ever make excuses like this when they lost? And so, to me, the fact that you're even making those comments and making excuses is a bigger alarm for me, kind of like what you said at the very open of this, is a bigger alarm to me than just the loss itself, because there's a messaging issue. And like, it all kind of like, because Saban is the head guy, it all boils down to him. But like, let's take a moment here and just think of the staff Nick has. Are there like, and even the past couple of staffs, the difference between Nick Saban now and Alabama now and the previous staffs of Alabama that have won championships is the staff, the rest of the staff under Nick, because obviously Nick is the greatest. No one's going to question that otherwise, but you don't have a great staff under you. You're going to struggle. I mean, Kevin Steele is a journeyman at this point. Tommy Reese, still a new offensive coordinator. I mean, this is his second ever offensive coordinator job other than at his alma mater at Notre Dame, which he only got because he was Brian Kelly's quarterback for a while. You have those two guys. I mean, Kevin Steele is a pretty good defensive coordinator. He's great when he has amazing D tackles like he did at Auburn. Didn't do great at Miami last year. I mean, let's go through some of the lists. And I looked this up before the podcast, Mason, because this is a point that I kind of wanted to bring up. Let's, like, looking at back at the staffs from about 2015-ish to 2020-ish, roughly that range. Here are some of the guys that was working for Nick Saban in various roles and where they're at now, okay? Tosh Lupoi, defensive coordinator at Oregon right now. He was like a DB coach at Bama for like 3 or 4 years. Mike Locksley, head coach at Maryland. He was on the offensive side of the ball for a long time at Bama. Dan Enos, He's been a head coach. He's been a journeyman too, but he was a pretty good quarterback coach. He's at Miami. He's at Arkansas again this season. Pretty good guy. Lane Kiffin, you know, we kind of talked about him. Great guy. Billy Napier, head coach at Florida right now. Mario Cristobal, just beat A&M in Miami. Josh Gattis, I mean, he was a big name at offensive coordinator last year. Won at Michigan, went to the playoff at Michigan. Carl Dunbar, defensive line coach for a while. He's currently the D-line coach in Pittsburgh in the NFL, one of the best D-lines and edge rushers in the league in TJ Watt. Already brought up Billy and Mario. Jeff Banks, he was an offensive guy. He's now at Texas as a special teams coordinator. And tight ends coach. They have some of the best tight ends in the country. Brent Key, I mean, he's the head coach at Georgia Tech right now. Derek Ansley, he's the defensive coordinator for the Chargers in the NFL. He was a DB coach. I mean, what do you got now? Like, are there any of those type of guys that have been under Nick Saban in the past couple of years? You had Pete Golding. I mean, everybody was so glad that he left. He's at Ole Miss. Bill O'Brien, everybody thought he was a joke the past couple of years. I mean, you're on your second or third offensive coordinator or offensive line coach since your stud left. Okay. This is the second year from Kentucky. Still not looking great. I mean, so to me, this is kind of the problem of like Nick Saban was given the benefit of the doubt of hiring coaches because he hired a lot of great guys. I mean, he had a great run and now it's, you're going to hire Kevin Steele as your DC. I mean, I even didn't even bring up Jeremy Pruitt, who's a great defensive coordinator.
Or Sark.
Or Sark, head coach at Texas that just came and beat you. I mean, who else am I missing, Mason? I mean, we can go down the list. We can probably even go further back. Yeah. Kirby Smart won the last two national championships.
It's never ending. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, and I don't, the thing is, I don't think you can put it all on the two coordinators. Like, I do feel like I was hating on Tommy Reese for a minute, but I do feel like he called a good game. I just think he could put Milroe in better situations. And I think about the thing about the coordinator positions at Alabama, both offense and defense, there's going to be games where you're going to have to put the guys in the position to actually help them to win the game. If we're being real, like this was a game where if Tommy Reese gets Jalen Milroe in better situations from some of his play calling, Alabama probably wins the game. Same thing with Kevin Steele. Like, you have to be able to elevate yourself to get the guys in better situations instead of just calling plays that'll work in the moment. And that was something that I didn't necessarily feel like worked this weekend for either one of them. Coming into the season, I was a little hesitant on both of them. I didn't necessarily hate both hires, but I also didn't necessarily love both hires. But I really liked what you said earlier. And one thing that kind of opened my eyes to some of the craziness that's actually happened with the program right now is my Twitter feed right now is filled with past players criticizing everything that's going on right now and giving their input. Like, I've seen Reggie Ragland, Reuben Foster, Bo Scarborough. Like, the names are ever ending. Like, it's just everybody's coming in and criticizing what's actually happening because everybody can see it. This isn't the same Alabama team that it has been in the past. Like, they're not as physical. Sure, they're a lot faster. They have better skill positions, if you want to say that. Like, but everything up the middle that has always worked for Alabama is not there. Like, you can compare Jalen Milroe to Blake Sims and Jake Coker. But Jalen Milroe isn't handing the ball off to freaking Derrick Henry and having Ryan Kelly block for him up the middle. Like, that's not happening right now. So you have to get yourself put in better situations than what you're doing right now. And going back to the whole quarterback thing, I'm probably a little bit higher on Milroe than everybody else is right now. Like, he's catching a lot of flack. And sure, it's deservedly so. But I think if you're at this point in the season and you bring Buckner in and he doesn't win the job, I think that concerns me a little bit. I mean, Buckner wasn't great at Notre Dame. It's not like he was some saving grace for them and just decided to transfer to Alabama because he wanted to win more. No, it's because he wasn't good enough to beat out Sam Hartman at Notre Dame. So he transferred to Alabama because guess what? Tommy Rees was his quarterback or was his offensive coordinator last year. And Tommy Rees, I'm sure they had a great connection together at Notre Dame. He's not bringing Tyler Buckner in if Buckner's not going to have a chance to play. He's going to sit there and say, yo, look, Milroe's our guy. Why don't you go play at NC State or something, right? Like he's not going to bring a guy he has a good connection with into Alabama just to sit the bench. So I think Milroe has great attributes. If you're this far into your career and you can't read defenses, I just don't know if it's going to happen for you. So like I said, if they are going to end up sticking with Milroe, Tommy Rees has to elevate his level of play calling and get better at putting Milroe in better situations at the beginning of the game. Because Alabama this year, you're not coming from behind. If you get in a hole at the beginning of the game, you're not going to be coming from behind and winning games just because Milroe's not that guy. If you come and you score a touchdown on your first possession, you score a field goal on your next possession after that, you're up by 10, then sure, Milroe's going to be good enough to keep you in the lead, and he's going to be able to sustain drives in that way. But he's never going to be the guy that's just going to absolutely like blow your socks off like Bryce Young was. So I say all that just to say again, I have no idea.
I really have no idea. This is going to be the last couple points that I'll make, and then we'll move on because we are a good bit in and still have a good bit of the show left to get to. And again, it's just a mirror of last week. So it's nice being on this side of it, Mason. But here's kind of the last points that I'll make about Alabama program season. I mean, listen, it's the same thing as LSU last week. The season is over. We're game two. Week two is over. Okay. There's still a long way to go. You know, there's not a dominant team in the SEC West to this point that any team, if you're LSU, you're not scared of Alabama. If you're Alabama, you're not scared of LSU. Same thing with A&M and Auburn and all these teams. Okay. There's not that dominant team. Even in the SEC, I'm not super scared about Georgia. We'll get to that later. But so you have your whole season in front of you. You still have all of your hopes and aspirations in front of you. I think the thing that's concerning is, like, obviously they knew they didn't have a quarterback, which is why you always had news and always had questions. Who's playing quarterback? Who's playing quarterback? You didn't know until a week or two before. It's Jalen Milroe. He looked okay against Middle Tennessee, and then he didn't look great now. Well, the reason why he's playing is probably because offensive line can't block. What's one of the things that we heard all offseason about Alabama, and especially on offense? Oh, they're going back to the old style of play. They're going back to murder ball. Well, you know, like, it's kind of hard to play murder ball when you can't run the ball and when you don't have those studs in the middle on defense. You don't have the Quinnen Williams. I mean, who watched the Monday Night Football? Aaron Rodgers, RIP. Sorry, dude. But Quinnen Williams and CJ Mosley on the Jets, two Alabama guys, both in the middle, they dominated that game for the Jets. You don't have that in, like, go down the list of the combos. It's not just that Alabama just had one guy. Like, they just had a middle linebacker that was awesome and then just had a D-line that was defensive tackle that was awesome. No, it was you always had a C.J. Mosley. You always had a Quinnen Williams, Jonathan Allen. Run down the list, Mason.
Yeah.
You don't have those guys, and you haven't had those guys since 2017, 2018, like, it's been a time, and part of that is because Nick, with some of his hires, decided to change and try to defend the spread, so you tried to get smaller and faster, but George is still giving you the blueprint to how to beat these teams. It's not like you have to completely change who you were to defend. George is being you. They have those guys in the middle. I mean, they can't rush the passer right now, but, like, the way they've won the past couple of years with their defense is they've blown you up in the middle and you can't do anything. Alabama doesn't have that force in the middle. So if you don't have that force in the middle on defense, it's going to make things so much harder for you to play murder ball. And like you said, this team cannot win games like last year's team can because you don't have a first NFL draft pick at quarterback that can bring you back in games. If they're behind, like you said, it's going to be tough. You better get in an ugly scrum fest with whoever you're playing and hope that you can take the air out of the clock, because at this point, Milrow isn't going to be able to come back in these games if he's forced to. And if you go to Ty Simpson or you go to Tyler Buchner, you know, let's hope and pray he doesn't get hurt from all the sacks that this offensive line seems to be giving up. I mean, there's hope. There's just a lot of issues that I think, because it's Nick Saban, a lot of people were willing to kind of wave the hand and not worry about. The defensive backs, I think, will be fine. I mean, they're still one of the best in the country. The wide receivers, to me, look maybe a little bit improved. You actually have some explosiveness from Burton that has been great to see as a Bama fan. And Kendrick Law and Kobe Prentice looked good when they got the ball. The problem is, can you get them the ball, and can you control the clock, and can you play great defense? And it still kind of remains to be seen. I mean, you almost gave up 500 yards, probably should have given up 40 plus points, but you didn't. So it's good. But I mean, you still have a hard schedule. Ole Miss comes in next week. So,
and the exact quote is joyless murder ball. And it has been neither joyless, or it has been joyless and it has not been murder ball. So I don't know where we're going to go with that.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on. That's enough Alabama. If you guys want us to keep talking about it, I'm sure we'll bring it up next week, because Bama plays freaking South Florida and nobody actually cares. So
if we're bringing this up again next week, Cam, I might not make it.
I might be solo next week if there's something goes on in South Florida next week or this coming up Saturday. So let's go ahead and move on to week three of the Down to the Wire poll. We actually had a couple of listeners send us in their top 25. So thank you so much for doing that. We really appreciate it. Keep doing it every week. Hey, if you're a new listener or you've been listening for a while, if you want to have a part in the show, this is the thing that we want from you guys. We want you to send us your top 25. This is our poll. This is your poll. You want to have USC ranked number one? Give it to us. We don't care. This is a poll for you guys. We don't care what the AP and the coaches say. This is for us, the fans, to create our own poll. And so we have our new rankings out. Two new individuals send us our stuff. Keep doing that. And if you're new and want to be a part of it, send it to our email at downtothewirecm@gmail.com. And we'll obviously put that out on social media too to remind you. But here's the poll this week, Mason. Same two teams got first place votes, and I think they're split. So we had three first place votes each. Georgia is still number one in the Down to the Wire poll, just barely edging Florida State at two, Michigan staying at three, Texas moving up to four after beating Alabama, USC falling is at five, actually. I think they maybe moved up two, Ohio State at six, Penn State at seven, Washington at eight. And then we actually have a tie for ninth place with Alabama and Tennessee are both tied at nine. And then at 11, we have Notre Dame, then Oregon, then LSU, then Utah. At 15, we have Kansas State and then Oregon State, Colorado, the Buffs at 17, Ole Miss at 18, North Carolina at 19 after a struggle against Appalachian State. And overtime for the second year in a row. Crazy. 20 is at Oklahoma. Duke at 21. Miami getting into the pool after beating A&M at 22. UCLA at 23. Mason, the Iowa Hawkeyes make it into the Down to the Wire poll at number 24, your favorite. And then rounding out the top 25 is actually Washington State after knocking off Wisconsin last week. And the only other team that got a vote, all these teams got votes, and there's only one other team that got vote was Clemson, and they're out of our top 25, Mason. I hate to see it, except I don't, actually. So Clemson is the last team out. They don't make the top 25, so it ends with Washington State. So, Mason, what are your thoughts on the poll this week?
Yeah, so Iowa didn't hit their 24-point mark this week, so obviously their coach is probably about to get fired. A man can only dream. if anybody's wondering, I was the one who left Iowa out of my top 25. I will continue to do that until they decide to get rid of their offensive coordinator. But who knows? But yeah, it felt pretty chalk. I'm a little bit higher on Washington right now. You said that we have them at 8. I don't remember. I think I had them closer to 5 or 6.
You got them at 5. Yeah. You have them at 5. I actually had them at 6. So we're pretty close there. The ones that had them a little bit lower, were actually a couple of the fan polls that came in actually had them lower, as well. You and I both had them higher than everybody else. The coaches and the AP had them, around the eight range, and then they were a little lower on some of the fan ones that came in. But yeah, I mean, we're both pretty high up on Washington.
Yeah, I'm really excited to start getting into the college football season a little bit deeper in the next couple of weeks, because like I feel like there's a pack of like Georgia, Michigan, Washington, USC, Ohio State, Penn State, and even you can add Tennessee to that. Like I feel like all of those teams have the potential to win a national championship, but they haven't been tested at all. So like it's just that group of teams is just kind of like, I don't really know what to do with them in my polls. So I just kind of keep throwing them in there at this point. But so I'm excited to start seeing those teams actually get tested a little bit to kind of see where the season is actually going to fall with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me your reasoning why you have Texas at 4 instead of at 2. I had in my poll, I had Florida State 1, Texas 2, then Georgia at 3 and Michigan at 4. Tell me why you have Texas at 4 instead of in one of the top 2 spots.
It was a little bit of I was still a little salty.
Okay.
so it was a little bit of that. But also at the same time, I do feel like Georgia and Michigan would be able to play the brand of football that Alabama was going to try and play against Texas. But like we were talking about earlier, Texas has a great run defense. So it would be interesting to see that. And I just kind of feel like it's just kind of weird right now. Like I was saying with Texas and Michigan, like they haven't been tested so far. So you don't really know what they actually are. So I just had to kept going off of how I feel like they are as a team. So I think if you put them on a neutral site field against Texas, I do think that both of them would still beat Texas, and same thing with Florida State.
Yeah. I mean, I went Florida State 1 and Texas at 2. I was actually trying to think, okay, who do I put at 1? Do I put Texas or Florida State? Who had the most, cause to me, at least for this top spot, man, like I'm going, okay, who has beaten somebody?
Yeah.
And they're the only two teams that have beaten anybody. And they're, so for me, to me, that is plenty enough reasons to be over Michigan and Georgia. Could Michigan and Georgia be better? They could. I don't know. They haven't played anybody. So I'm not going to crown them if you haven't played somebody, which is why I had Florida State and Texas in the top 2 spots for me. And so to me, I think it's a little bit more impressive that Florida State won by 20 million points in a quote unquote neutral site against LSU, even though it is super impressive for Texas to be the first one to beat Nick Saban by double digits in Tuscaloosa. But that's kind of the reasoning I put there.
Yeah, I have no problem with you putting them at 2. Like they definitely, you can make the argument that they deserve it. Like, so that's really not a problem to me at all.
Yeah. And I think one of the only other differences that we really have is Ohio State.
Yeah.
You have Ohio State at 7. I have them at 10, man.
I just don't know what to do with them. They're tripping me out. They have so much talent, dude. So I think if they could put it all together, then yeah, they should be in the conversation. But at the same time, like you having them at 10 doesn't bother me at all. But you're sitting there telling me they have Marvin Harrison Jr. and they have Trayvon Henderson and XYZ. You keep going down the list. Like they have a ton of talent. And if they put it all together, I think they're going to be fine. But so far through 2 weeks, it's just been kind of not necessarily impressive. Their quarterback hadn't been great. Whatever.
All right. So that's the Down to the Wire poll. We'll again post this on social media for you all to see. But again, you want to be a part of the show. You want to interact with us. Send us your top 25. We'd love to include you on there. I'd love to have 15, 20, 30 50 people on this thing. I mean, me and a friend of mine literally created a Excel spreadsheet to help automate some of this stuff, so I don't have to manually enter in and add everything. So it'll make it super helpful for when all you guys send in your polls. So go ahead and do that. Again, send it to our email, downtothewirecm@gmail.com. And again, that'll be on social media for us too. Or just, you know, reply to our tweets or Facebook posts, or even send us a DM on Instagram. I don't care. Just get it to us somehow and we'll add you in. So
whenever we take over the AP poll, the first 30 people to send in their ballots to us, we'll make sure you get a vote in the AP poll with us.
For sure. For sure. All right. So last two segments, Mason, let's go ahead and get through it, man. Fantasy. Tell us how fantasy went last week.
Okay, so we both put up really big numbers, surprisingly. So I came out with a win this week. I had 86 points. You turned around, you had 73. Normally 73 is a winner. I got lucky with some of my picks. Audric Estime went crazy.
Unbelievable.
Well, the crazy part about it is, so we do quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, flex. My quarterback, or my tight end, was Cal's tight end. Put up a goose egg for me, and I still somehow put up 86. So
unbelievable,
that was nice.
Unreal.
So this is kind of mirroring what happened for us last year. I started off 2-0 against you last year too. You turned around and went 2-0 against me in week 3 and week 4. So I'm hoping that we aren't going to do that again this year, and I can pull it out again. So my week 3 lineup right now at quarterback, I'm going with Michael Penix Jr. Running back is Nick Singleton. Wide receiver, Keon Coleman. Tight end is Luke Haas. I don't even know how to say his name. Another dart throw tight end. And my flex, I'm going with Dayton Wade. I like this lineup. I think I have 3 studs at my quarterback, running back, and wide receiver. But at tight end, I kind of had to go with a dart throw. And flex, I was just taking a shot at somebody who I think could put up good numbers. Yeah, so what do you got?
Man, Mason, I hate getting in this 2-0 hole. It's not a fun time being 0-2 in this thing and having to figure out a way to finagle my way back in. But I think I might have, you know, you went heavy on 3 and we're hoping those 3 will pull out the win. I think I have a pretty even lineup that's going to give me even points to bring me all the way this week, okay? So at quarterback, I'm throwing a curveball at you. I'm going with Riley Leonard, the quarterback at Duke, the guy who beat Clemson. I mean, they're not playing anybody good this week, so might as well go with them, okay? At Duke. At running back, I'm going with Jahar Jordan from Louisville. Again, I'm going ACC heavy this week, Mason, okay? Wide receiver, I'm bringing in one of the boys at LSU playing Mississippi State, Brian Thomas, okay? He has 3 or 4 touchdowns in his 2 games. He's going to get me another 1 or 2 this week, so it's going to be fine. It'll be great. At tight end, I'm going with Ben Sinnott at Kansas State, okay? Solid guy there. And then flex, you know, you put on Keon Coleman for Florida State. I had to get a Florida State guy myself. I'm going with Trey Benson, the running back there, because they're going to run all over Boston College, and he's going to get all the touchdowns instead of Keon Coleman. So it's just going to win for me, okay? So that's what I'm going with.
I'm glad you threw in an LSU wide receiver. That basically just secures me the win for week 3. So thank you for that.
You're going to eat those words, Mason. I'll play it back here just okay. For you whenever we run this segment next week.
Deal.
So just to recap Mason and I's rosters this week. So Mason has Michael Penix Jr. from Washington at quarterback. He has Nick Singleton from Penn State at running back. Keon Coleman at wideout from Florida State. Luke Haas, tight end at Arkansas, and Dayton Wade at flex from Ole Miss. And again, I have Riley Leonard from Duke at quarterback. Jahar Jordan from Louisville at running back, Brian Thomas at wide receiver from LSU, Ben Sinnott at tight end for Kansas State, and Trey Benson at flex from Florida State. So that's fantasy this week. We'll see if I can start my comeback on the season. What I already did, Mason, was come back and take a commanding lead in our picks last week. I went freaking off last week, and you kind of struggled. So last week in our picks, Mason went 4-6, so that brings his season total to 10-10. He's at 500 for the year right now after 2 weeks. Your boy went 9-1 last week, bringing my season overall record to 13-7. The only game I lost was the dumb Friday night game with Kansas and Illinois. I was undefeated on Saturday, but freaking Illinois choked. It was just awful against Kansas on Friday night. So I'm going to keep the ball rolling, Mason. So let's go ahead and get into it. We're starting off hot with my boys in the boot going to Mississippi State and Stark Vegas, LSU at Mississippi State. LSU is a 9.5-point favorite in this game, Mason. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think this is actually going to be kind of a tricky game for LSU because I do like Mississippi State's defense. The only thing about Mississippi State is they were a +5 in turnovers against Arizona, and they still took it to overtime. So that does kind of scare me a little bit. So I think I am going to go with LSU.
Yeah, you know, that was such a weird game. I didn't really watch it. I just kind of like listened to it a little bit and saw some stuff. And they like refused to throw the ball. LSU didn't do great in run defense against Grambling, but it's also hard to get up for Grambling, you know. 9.5 is a lot of points on the road in the SEC. It's an early 11 a.m. kickoff, but I'm still going with the Tigers winning on the road at Starkville because I just don't think, again, this is the hardest team to pick in the conference, but they're also playing a completely different brand of football on the offensive side of the ball. So I actually do like LSU to cover the 9.5 in Starkville. The next one, this is actually where our boy Josh Pate is going. Kansas State at Missouri. This should be an interesting game. Kansas State is a 5-point favorite on the road in Columbia, Missouri. Big 12 SEC matchup. Can the SEC catch up to what's going on in the rest of the country? I mean, everybody's talking about how the SEC sucks this year. It's down. Part of that is because the quarterback play isn't great in the SEC this year. But can Missouri start bringing the SEC back up, or is Kansas State keep burying them in the ground?
They definitely cannot. I'm going with Kansas State. But this one is a sniff test game for me. I was expecting Kansas State to be probably closer to a 7.5-8-point favorite. I was a little surprised it came in at 5, so I'm going Kansas State.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Kansas State too, because Kansas State's coaches, Coach Klein, actually is one of the best coaches in the FBS against the spread. He has like he's like 33-18 against the spread, which is third in the nation since he's been head coach there. And I just think they're going to be really good this year. They won the Big 12 last year. And Missouri, decent team. I just don't think that they'll be able to do enough and be able to run the ball on Kansas State. Kansas State's just always a solid, solid team in everything they do. So I'm going with Kansas State as well. Next one, Mason. This used to be a really competitive rivalry and kind of a trip up game for the Georgia Bulldogs, but South Carolina going to Athens, but Georgia is a 27.5-point favorite at home against an SEC East opponent that's not Vanderbilt. What the heck is this line, Mason?
This has always been your upset pick every year for about 3 years now, so I don't think you're going to go there this year. 27.5 is a big number. I think Spencer Rattler has actually been playing fairly well through the first 2 weeks. So I'm actually going to ride with South Carolina. I definitely don't think they win, but I do think they cover.
27.5 is just so many points, Mason. It's just so much. And if there is going to be an upset, I'm definitely not picking an upset on this game. So I'll start it right now. There's not going to be an upset in this game. But if there was going to be, a stat to think about is Georgia is like 80-something, is like ranked in the 80s for pressure rate so far this year. And do you even know who they played? No, you don't, because they haven't played anybody. And they're at like in the 80s for pass rush and sacks and pressure rating. South Carolina doesn't have a great offensive line. But Spencer Rattler is 4-1 as a starter against AP top 10 teams. So some interesting stats there for you. I don't think they win, but I think they keep it closer than the 27.5. I don't think Georgia wins by 4 touchdowns. So I'm going to go South Carolina. I think it'll be close and probably going to be Georgia kind of gets away and extends the lead, gets some room towards the end. But I think it's going to be a close game for maybe about 2.5, 3 quarters. Next one is another pretty big line, and part of this is because of the news that we're really not even going to talk about because I'm not interested in talking about that mess.
Absolutely not.
Washington at Michigan State. Michigan State has a new coach because of Mel Tucker being an idiot. Washington is a 16-point favorite and soon to be Big Ten rivals, Mason. Big Ten. Who would have thought Washington and Michigan State being conference rivals? Washington is 16-point favorite in Lansing. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Michael Penix balls out in this game. I don't think that Michigan State is going to fight for Mel Tucker because who would at this point? So I'm going with Washington, and I'm going to go with Washington big, actually. I could see this being a 27-point game.
Yeah, I'm going with Washington big here, too. I think Michael Penix, unfortunately, balls out for my fantasy detriment, but hopefully the rest of my players can keep up with that. I'm going to go Washington big, too. And we're going to spend a little bit more time on this one, Mason. Tennessee at Florida. We actually had a listener email us in as a Florida Gator fan, giving us his thoughts of the program. Because, you know, last week after talking about Utah and Florida, talking about state of the program, do Florida fans like ready to get rid of Billy Napier? Like what's going on here? He sent me a good long thoughts on what kind of happened before and what could happen this week against Tennessee. I'm going to try and kind of pick out certain points that he has to talk about it since we are running a little bit low on time here. But Tennessee hate week, he thinks this is the biggest game for Napier's tenure here while at Florida. Biggest game. And I can understand it. He doesn't have a win against any of their main rivals so far in one year. So that's LSU, Tennessee, Georgia, and what's the other one? Florida State. And two of those four are top three in our poll. Yeah. Top two in our poll, right? So biggest game in his career at Florida. He did kind of something that I thought was kind of interesting is the Utah game and how it ended up playing out really kind of pissed Florida Gator fans off, which completely understand. I mean, you got dominated, but probably a lot of them were thinking, you know, it'll probably be a close game. We'll lose. A lot of people were predicting them to go sub 500 this year anyways. There weren't huge expectations on the year. So, you know, that probably kind of helps Napier in a way when you don't have a huge expectations, probably like a Dan Mullen did whenever he got fired after his SEC championship game appearance the year before. So that probably helps him. He doesn't think that Graham Mertz was as bad as a lot of Florida fans think that he was. And I kind of agree with that. I mean, he wasn't horrible. He wasn't game changing by any sense of the word anywhere near Richardson, but you're not really expecting that. He didn't necessarily lose you the game against Utah. Nothing really to take away about the McNeese State game. They did ride their two backs. The main thing for them is going to be the running game with Johnson and Etienne. But he thinks, and I kind of think too, this is a perfect opportunity for this Florida Gator team and program for a big name win against Tennessee. Because kind of like what we mentioned earlier, Tennessee has not won in Gainesville since 2003. And that's when Ron Zook was the coach at the Florida Gators. And you could probably count three or four coaches since that's been the case. And another stat that I saw earlier before we got on the podcast, Mason, is that since 2019, Florida is undefeated as a home underdog.
What?
4-0 as home underdog since 2019. Pretty crazy right there, Mason. I mean, what are we thinking about that? They're obviously home dogs. There's like a 6.5-point underdog against Tennessee, so just something to think about. It's a night game. It's the 6 o'clock primetime game on ESPN in the Swamp, and when that place is going and rocking, and you know it's going to be rocking since it's Tennessee coming to town, that it's going to be hard to play. And with Joe Milton struggling, not being fully revved up and going on that Tennessee offense, this is a great opportunity for this Gator team to get a big win to really help their program. I'm sure they have a ton of recruits coming in this game. The one thing that he's worried about is special teams. Special teams haven't been great. They missed an extra point last week. I mean, there's not really a ton to say, even with all the shenanigans they had against Utah. I mean, we all saw it. wasn't great. So he thinks they win outright. So with all that said, Mason, we'll get to you now. Let's talk a little bit about this Tennessee-Florida game. Tennessee at Florida. Again, Tennessee is a 6.5-point a road favorite. What do you think?
So I haven't last year, going back to last year before we started the season, I was very high on my guy, Billy Napier. I haven't been quite as impressed with him as I thought I was going to be at this point. They have kind of struggled. First year, it is what it is for a new coach. Coming into this year, the Utah game was bad. Like, I don't think you can kind of gloss that over. Like you said, it's been a house of horrors for Tennessee being there in the swamp. I'm having a hard time believing that Florida's going to win this game. I think this is actually going to go the other direction, and I think this is going to be more of a breakout for Joe Milton. And I think you're going to be seeing a big performance out of Tennessee's offense this week. And I think it's just going to end up being hard for Florida to keep up at the end of the game. So I am going with Tennessee this week.
Going with them to cover the 6.5 as well.
Yep.
You know,
sorry, listener.
I have been all over Tennessee all offseason. I've been a big fan of Joe Milton. I think this offense is going to be great. And I picked Tennessee to win the East and make it to Atlanta. This is the first big test for them. And whether it's the listener convincing me, or maybe it's just me just thinking on it more, I don't know what it is, but I would be very, and part of it is also the performance by Tennessee last week. Didn't even perform great against Virginia the week before offensively. I absolutely don't think Tennessee covers the 6.5. I do not think they cover. So I'm going to pick Florida in the pick against the spread. When it comes to an outright winner, man, if Tennessee is going to win this game, they better take the crowd out of it and cover. I mean, they better do like they did against LSU last year in Death Valley and get up early and get the crowd out of the game, because if that crowd is rolling and if Florida is able to control the game with how they want to play, running the ball, taking shots to their freshman wide receiver Wilson and Ricky Pearsall, and having Trevor Etienne, and Johnson run the ball, play ball control, and keep their defense off the field, they have a good chance. I don't know if I'm fully ready to pick Florida to outright win, but I do think they at the very least, cover the 6.5. I think it's going to be a great, great game, because it seems to always be, no matter how good either team is, especially the past 5 to 10 years. Definitely the game to watch this weekend. I'm going Florida to cover, and I wouldn't be surprised if they won either.
Yeah, look, I really hope they do, honestly, because, like I said, I like Billy Napier. I have a hard time seeing them keep up with Tennessee's offense. And, you know, if they do, then awesome. But I have a hard time seeing it.
All right, let's go a little bit quicker on some of these next picks coming up. We got about 5 more to go. Georgia Tech at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is actually a 19-point favorite after their performance against Tulane. Georgia Tech still kind of struggling there. What do you think on that one, Mason?
I think Ole Miss is going to try and flex on Georgia Tech because they do have Bama next week. So I think they're going to put up big numbers, so I'm going Ole Miss.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I think 19 is a lot, though, especially with how Ole Miss performed last week. I think they win, but I don't think they cover. I'm going Georgia Tech to cover the 19. Next one was a game that we had circled last year. We don't really have it circled as much this year. It's BYU going on the road to Arkansas. Arkansas is an 8-point favorite in this one, Mason. What do you think about BYU and Arkansas?
If I remember correctly, BYU only beat Rice by 14 points last week. So I don't think they even get close to beating Arkansas. So I'm riding with the Hogs.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to win by 14 to food and come to the Razorbacks and win on the road. I'll go Arkansas as well. One of the few wins that the Arkansas Razorbacks win this year. I'm going Arkansas as well. Next one is a sneaky good game. Syracuse at Purdue. Syracuse is actually a 2.5-point favorite in this one. What do you think?
Yeah, 2.5, but it is at Purdue. So them being favored at Purdue is a little sketchy. So I think I am actually going to go with Syracuse.
Going Syracuse? You had me thinking you were going Purdue there, Mason.
I didn't give you a pump fake.
You got me the fake there. Okay, well, I'm going to go opposite of you. I'm going with Purdue because they're at home. I mean, simple as that. Home dogs, give them to me. This was a great game opening weekend last year. Pitt at West Virginia. This is basically a pick 'em, Mason. Pitt is a 1-point favorite on the road at West Virginia. West Virginia needs this one to keep keep the head coach's job, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I'm going to go with West Virginia just strictly because it is a pick 'em and they're at home. So give me the Mountaineers.
I'm going the same with you. I'm going with West Virginia as well. And then the last game that we're picking for this week is a Big 12 matchup. Interesting. TCU at Houston. The last time we picked TCU was against your Colorado Buffs, and they lost. But TCU is a 7.5-point favorite against Houston on the road. What you think?
I think Houston is hot garbage this year, and I don't think TCU is great. So I'm actually going to go with TCU. Hopefully they try and get some of their juice back that they had last year.
Yeah, Danner Holgorsen is struggling at Houston. They're not very good. So I'm going with TCU as well to cover it on the road and to beat Houston. So that's it. Marathon of an episode this week, guys. We appreciate you for listening. We will be sending out stuff throughout the week on social media. So be on the lookout for that. And we will catch you guys on the next one.